This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott, reminding you that Bloomberg Government is the only information service provider in Washington, D.C. that focuses on the business impact of government actions. That's key, business impact of government actions. It's what we do all day, every day. You'll find the fruits of our labor at www.bgov.com. Now we've partnered with our friends at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, bringing that concept right here to the airwaves, Thursday at 11 AM and Fridays at 2:30. Looking for more? Plenty for you to review at www.bgov.com. Today on Capital Impact, we're bringing the world of defense into focus. The threat of sequestration is now upon us. Do you feel it? However, Bloomberg Government's uncovered a little loophole that might make that threat a little bit less painful. We'll speak to defense analysts Robert Levinson and Dr. Kevin Brancato a little bit later in the program. But we'll kick it off with the BGov 200. It's the Federal Industry Leaders 2012. I can hear the crowd cheering in the background as the leaders are coming up to the starting gate. Now, seriously, we've seen some increases and declines in federal spending from 2009 to 2011. We're looking at about a 6% drop to the 530 or so billion that we now have for fiscal 2011. Less money equals problems, because that's a fight amongst the top dogs in contracting to get that money. Well, BGov's done some analysis to discover who those big winners are likely to be. To give us more on an analysis of federal spending and revealing the big winner, hopefully, got my fingers crossed, we've got federal business analyst Brian Friel and Ann Laurent, federal business intelligence team lead and editor of this particular story. Thanks for joining us, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Now, this is pretty big stuff. We're talking the big guys in defense contracting.
It's a lot of money. If you think about it, the government spends more with its contractors than 150 countries spend through their entire gross domestic products.
So
we're talking about upwards of 141,000 companies, of which we've chosen or we've analyzed and come up with the top 200.
You just got to my first question here. We're looking at a lot of people, a lot of companies. Why did we do this? No, I'm not trying to be flippant. Please don't take it as rude. I'm just curious as to know why we did this.
Well, there are many reasons, but I would say one of them is because we can. And almost alone, we are capable of putting together the data that gives us this kind of a look, this kind of a comprehensive look at the leading companies, not just overall and overall spending, but also in 24 categories and 20 of the top spending agencies. For 2011, right now, but we'll be doing this every year going forward. So Bloomberg Government has the capability to do that. We have the data to do that. We use the government's data, but we clean it in 12 different ways.
That was going to be my next question. You say that almost alone we're able to do this, and
right,
we're not using entirely government data.
We're using our proprietary database of the federal procurement data. So
okay,
we clean it, we analyze it. Ryan's done a tremendous amount of work to figure out exactly who the companies are that will be in the BGov 200, and we are right now the exclusive organization in the market that's looking at this way. But I wanted to say another thing about why do this, because I think it's important and it underlies everything that we do on our teams, Federal Business Intelligence Defense Team, and we also work very closely with the Technology Telecommunications Team at Bloomberg Government. If you look at it from the perspective of our country, being able to put clarity and understanding on both sides of the federal market, that is to say, to help program managers and procurement officials in government better understand the companies they're buying from, and to help those companies better understand the needs, the requirements, and the motivations of the buyers in government, allows the government market to operate in a more rational way. And if it operates more rationally, pricing is better, and the United States citizens get a better bang for their buck.
It's almost a needs analysis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a very peculiar market with very strange operating rules and very strange policies on the one hand, and on the other hand, it's the biggest market in the entire world. So we really do need to understand it, and we need the players in it to understand each other. 30 years ago, Michael Bloomberg created Bloomberg to help the bond markets buyers and sellers better understand each other and mm-hmm. rationalize that market. In the same way, he's now created Bloomberg Government for us to help this market work more effectively. It's actually a good example of little-d democracy at work.
One of the big things that the Bloomberg talks about a lot is transparency, and this is bringing that transparency to light, especially with regard to the 200, Brian.
Right, yeah, it can be surprising to people from outside of the government or from outside of the companies that do business with the government how difficult it is to get information about what agencies are buying. Even the agencies themselves often don't know which are the big companies that they're doing the most business with. And so this kind of transparency can help them understand the market that they are creating, the people in the government, and the market they're operating in, the companies.
On a side note, you just brought up something kind of interesting. Even the companies that are doing the business don't know who they're doing the most business with. How is that possible if they're the ones writing the checks? I'm just curious now.
Well, it's a huge government. Again, going back to the amount of money that's being spent, there are 57 agencies that we looked at spending at. The Defense Department alone spent $375 billion with contractors last year. All other agencies spent $159 billion. It's a lot of money. The amount of work that is being done is just too much for any one person to really see without this kind of analysis done for them.
This is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've got Brian Friel, a federal business analyst, and Ann Laurent, team leader of the Federal Business Intelligence Team with BGov. And we're discussing kind of, the BGov Top 200. It's the 200 federal contractors or people who have been doing business in the federal industry, and we're talking about the leaders for 2012. Brian, as you were going through the numbers, did you come up with any shockers, anything that surprised you?
Well, the one thing that really struck me was how concentrated the federal market is. The amount of prime contract dollars that goes to the top 200 companies. Again, remember we said there are 141,000-plus companies overall that have a direct relationship with the government.
Mm-hmm.
The top 200 get nearly two-thirds of the prime contract dollars. So it's a very concentrated market. And what that means for companies outside the 200 is that it's good for them to learn who those companies are, because prime contract dollars translate into subcontract dollars for other companies.
Okay. Ann?
It's also interesting to look at a study like this and at the rankings from the perspective of how it is that companies and agencies can put them to day-to-day use. In other words, how are they actionable?
Where can I make money with this myself? How can this benefit me?
Correct. And people look at rankings and they say, oh, that's interesting, and put it aside. Well, in the federal market, this has tremendous use for contractors in, as Brian said, understanding the complexity and the complexion, if you will, of the market itself. But it's also going to be tremendously useful for them as they go to present themselves to federal buyers, because our rankings will allow them to say, for example, I'm the number X contractor in your agency, and I'm the number X contractor in this category within the entire federal government, and I'm the number X contractor in this category at your agency. I mean, that's a relatively fine-toothed comb that we're applying. On the government side, federal agencies are required to do market research when they are making procurements and acquisitions. And using this list, they will be able to at least say to themselves, hey, here are the leaders in this space that we're going to be buying in. Maybe we should start there. Here are the leaders at our agency, but here are the leaders at another agency who are doing work in this space. Maybe we should start there. Or at least they can begin to feel more comfortable with companies that appear on this list. And, you know, of course, we want that to happen, because mm-hmm. that's our contribution to help make the market more transparent.
Yeah.
If people are, you know, this is the Bloomberg brand behind this list. This isn't just some list. The Bloomberg brand is behind this list. So for a company to be able to say, we are the number X contractor at the Army in ISR, according to Bloomberg Government,
mm-hmm.
it really has some meaning. It has some heft.
Conversely, it's almost as though we've put together our own multiple award contract of sorts. Looking at it from that side, the Army can go, who are our leaders in this particular space?
Exactly.
Oh, here they are. Let's go through, and we've got now our own fishing license to pick out. We've created that license for them, or that pond on which they can draw.
Exactly.
Interesting. Interesting. Let's take a step back just a little bit. Back in 1993, Defense Secretary Les Aspin
held what was dubbed as the Last Supper, right? Got a bunch of defense contractors together in a room, basically, around the table. Hey, you know what? Money's shrinking. You guys better start merging, or else that pool is going to dry up, and you're not going to be able to get any piece of any government pie because that pie is going to be all gone. You say in an article released recently, Brian, there are no Last Suppers in this. Why?
Well, the defense industry really did consolidate heavily after that Last Supper.
Yeah, brought us Lockheed Martin.
And now there are five major prime contractors in the defense market. The 33 businesses were consolidated into those five major contractors. The department doesn't see any value in further consolidating among those top five. But what they have said is that they do envision mergers and acquisitions consolidation at lower levels, either the top big five buying companies that are smaller or mid-tier companies merging or, again, buying smaller companies. And, again, one of the things that these types of rankings can do is help companies identify potential merger and acquisition targets.
Pentagon, of course, is going to be monitoring it heavily.
That's right.
To ensure that we're not doing anything, running afoul of the rules that they've now set forth, the parameters.
They want to make sure they have a robust industrial base and competitors so that they don't have to turn just to one supplier for something.
All right. So
this might be a really good time, Brian, to talk a little bit about what's not in the BGov 200 yet. Can you give us some examples of companies that are up-and-comers, that are rising stars, that you didn't just look at the top 200, right? You looked at a whole lot more than that.
Right, yeah. We put a ranking against all 140,000-plus companies, and I was looking at the group just below that 200 mark. In order to be part of the BGov 200, you had to have about $280 million-plus in prime contract awards with the federal government last year. In that space of around $200 million, $150 million, there were some really interesting companies that you could see moving into the top 200 over the next few years, like AeroVironment, the largest drone maker for the Defense Department. Small drone maker, right. Orbital Sciences and SpaceX, companies that are competing really in the nascent stages of the commercial spaceflight market.
Sure.
A company called Essentia, which is a rising health information technology provider that's been buying up smaller companies and is now above $100 million in federal contracts. So there's some very interesting companies to watch, and given the shifts in the market that will be caused by deficit reduction and the push for agencies to reduce their expenditures, we could see new companies moving into the top 200 ranks over the next few years.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about a lot of companies, and I don't want to hold your feet to the fire. I don't want to have to call the dogs in. But before you leave here, I want to know a little bit about this top 200, and maybe, I don't know, can you reveal number one? Can you tell me who number one is? Or
it's not a surprise, Bry.
It's Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin has been the top federal contractor since its formation in 1995.
Very good.
And so that's not a surprise. What one thing that is striking about Lockheed is that it has continued to grow its revenues, its contract awards, even as government contract spending has declined over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And we'll be exploring some of the reasons behind that on BGov over the next few days.
What we can also say that's interesting about Lockheed, that I don't know that other people necessarily or other organizations necessarily have reported, is that Lockheed's number one or number two, we found, in seven of the top 24 agency buyers that we wrote about. And then they are number one or number two in eight of the top 20 categories of buying. That is the categories that government agencies place their contracts into to report them.
Interesting nuggets of information, all of which can be contained therein within the BGov 200. Federal Industry Leaders 2012, the study. Look for it on BGov. Brian Friel, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Ann Laurent, again, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Alan. It's been great to be here. We look forward to talking again.
This is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And defense contractors are threatening layoffs. That's right. Layoffs, that is, if sequestration occurs, also claiming significant staffing cuts will occur at the same time. Now, one major contractor says that these cuts could happen as early as September 2012. But Is this really happening or merely hype to put pressure on politicians to repeal spending cuts prior to an election? Joining me are the authors of a BGov Insight entitled War Funding Reversal Adds New Sequester Targets. Before we dive into this, I've got, let me introduce them. I'm sorry. Federal business analyst Rob Levinson and analyst as well, Dr. Kevin Brancato. Thank you very much for joining me.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. So, Kevin, let me just ask you real quick, can you define sequestration for us in this front, just to get everybody up to speed?
Sure. Folks might remember that we had a bunch of budget problems last year. Congress passed the Budget Control Act of 2011. $1.2 trillion in cuts over the next 9 years are required now because the supercommittee failed. This translates into $55 billion in cuts in fiscal 13 for defense. And those cuts are what's being debated about right now, how potentially to reverse them, or what the impact would be if they were implemented.
Rob, the study entitled War Funding Reversal Adds New Sequester Targets, it's a BGov Insight, newly released on BGov. Contractors are worried, as I mentioned. Pentagon was very vocal about the devastating effect sequestration could have on some military programs. You guys think that this may very well not be as bad as originally anticipated?
Well, what happened was, and the focus of the insight there was, originally the Secretary of Defense had stated that the war funding, which is about $88.5 billion for the next fiscal year, was off limits to sequestration. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was that the cuts then would be deeper in the money that was left, the regular, what they call the base budget. And in fact, what has happened is the Secretary of Defense and the OSD has reversed itself, now says, no, the way they read the law now and the direction from the Office of Management and Budget is the $88 billion is in the pool. So in some ways, it's less devastating because the bigger the pool that you have to cut from, the less deep you have to go into each individual place that you cut. But at the same time, it exposes some programs that are in that war funding that we thought were sort of off the table. So there's probably some contractors that thought maybe they were safe, but now are not safe because they have some piece of that war funding.
Oh, it's been a long time that war funding has supposedly been off the table. It was last November that Secretary Panetta sent a letter to Senator McCain saying so. And most analysts in D.C., defense analysts, have assumed that war funding would just be excluded from it.
Mm-hmm.
People have written that Congress was using a strategy of shifting funds to war spending to protect them from cuts. But it turns out that even some members of Congress appear surprised that this would happen. But in terms of the overall levels of funding, the same amount of cuts, $55 billion, occurs whether or not war funding is applicable or not. We also found out that it's not just money from fiscal 13, but previous year's money, which hasn't been spent, that would also be subject to sequestration. And so there's a slightly broader base than a lot of analysts had thought, but it's also a larger opportunity for contractors to get dinged.
So let's talk nuts and bolts. You're talking about people being surprised at things that are not being cut or potentially not being cut. What are we talking about that will get cut?
Well, basically, everything is sort of now with the war funding and, as Kevin mentioned, the previous year funding. Now, the previous year funding, it's important to point out, that's for defense only. The
right.
Previous year funding for non-defense is not part. The law exempts that. The other thing that the law allows the president for the defense funding to exempt personnel, and that's about a third of the base budget, some $135 billion or so. The president has that option. It is very likely that he would exercise that option. Now, personnel, you have to be careful. That is basically the pay of uniformed military people. That is not civilian personnel. That is not health care. So you take that out, and of the annual FY13 money, it's about $390 billion left over. Then, as I said, there's about war funding of another $88 billion, and then that old money, which is estimated at about $83 billion, that will be left over on the end of the fiscal year. And that estimate, historically, OMB makes these estimates, historically they're pretty low.
Right.
So it could be as much as another $125 billion there. And basically that covers operations and maintenance, procurement and research and development. That's really what's left on the table where they can pull this money from.
How much time do you think is going to be able to pass before an impact is felt somewhere?
Well, let's just say that's about a 10% cut for procurement, research and development, military construction, and for all those funds from previous years, from current year, for more funding. That's not insubstantial. But when that starts is not entirely clear. Sequestration is supposed to hit, the president gives an order, on January 2nd.
Right.
But that's 3 months after the fiscal year begins. And that order comes at such a late stage that agencies run the risk of overspending for a short amount of time if OMB has not, at the beginning of the fiscal year, October 1st, restricting the amount that they apportion. So I personally think it's likely that OMB will restrict apportions so that agencies don't have a chance of overspending. Mm-hmm. And that would mean impacts for obligating funds and putting them on contract would start in October. But that doesn't necessarily mean that immediate spending would fall off a cliff right away.
So you see them hopefully putting restrictions on that spending to prevent the eating up of the surplus, so to speak.
Well, I wouldn't say hopefully. I think a lot of the goals of the defense industry and of politicians is to try to reverse this. But in terms of the likely timing of it, it's very difficult to say because many companies at the beginning of the fiscal year will be working off previous contracts they've signed. So when those cuts start hitting, it really depends on the nature of the contracts, the nature of the programs.
Yeah, I think one of the things you have to differentiate is certainly the Pentagon, you know, anything that it can sort of push to the right and push off till January and see what happens, it will certainly do that. But there are certain goods and services that the Pentagon really can't do without immediately, things like fuel for jets or food for troops. Those are things that it's going to have to make a decision. Now, OMB can hold back money, but that means, okay, if I hold back money for the food budget, I still got to feed the troops.
Still have to feed them,
so how do I do that on less money? That really puts them in a bind, and it's not clear that OMB wants to be able to hold that back. You know, if I haven't cut the troops or I haven't cut the civilian personnel or people that I got to feed or fuel for my jets, if I haven't cut those, it's really hard to cut back some of those essential goods and services. So it's going to be really tricky for OMB to sort of engineer this and make it happen in a non-disruptive kind of way.
We're speaking with Rob Levinson and Dr. Kevin Brancato, authors of the new BGov Insight, entitled War Funding Reversal Adds New Sequester Targets. And I've only got a little bit of time left, but I got so many questions left for you. Are we venturing down an alley at this point with our fingers crossed? Like, what do we know that we don't know, or what do we not know at this point?
Well, I think it's important to people point out is in order for sequestration not to happen, a new law has to be passed. Okay. It is on the books. The train is moving down the road. And right now, in fact, we just saw today, you know, Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, the number two guy on the Republican side in the House, said, look, nothing's going to happen until after the election. So in this lame duck session of Congress, they're going to have to deal with sequestration, the end of the so-called Bush tax cuts, the alternative minimum tax, the doc fix. There's a whole bunch of stuff. This is this fiscal cliff that people have described. A whole bunch of stuff that's being put on that lame duck Congress that it's all got to solve before January 2nd and the tax stuff before January 1st. Being optimistic, given, you know, how difficult it has been to get things through Congress, being optimistic at this point, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope involved in that. And I'm not so sure that it's going to be very easy for that lame duck Congress to solve all these problems.
Kevin, final words?
I would think that companies that say that there might be a large tranche of layoffs coming, either in September or October, it appears likely that there would be a substantial number, but it might very well be a little bit later than that.
All right. Very good. The insight is entitled War Funding Reversal Adds New Sequester Targets. Their names are, of course, Dr. Kevin Brancato and Rob Levinson. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks a lot, Al.
I appreciate it. That does it for Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio. Just a reminder, you can learn more about BGov's award-winning analysis, tools, and data all at www.bgov.com. Thanks again to Brian Friel and Ann Lauren, whose analysis of the BGov 200 Federal Industry Leaders 2012 is available at bgov.com. We'll plan on getting together again next Thursday, 11 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. I promise we'll have plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m., I'm Alan Scott.